May it please the court. My name is Christian Izagiri, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Edward Gentry. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal, but I'll keep an eye on my clock. The fundamental problem in this case is that the lower court admitted hearsay statements of an unknown number of declarants who may not have seen the actual accident that occurred in this case. Admitting that hearsay without Mr. Gentry having the ability to challenge it was constitutional error. So I'd like to start first with the Comito balancing, talking about Mr. Gentry's significant interest that he had in confronting these witnesses. Then I'd like to move into the complete lack of cause provided by the government for denying him that right, and then briefly discuss the correct standard, which is harmless error beyond a reasonable doubt because of the nature of the evidence, which was constitutional.
So, counsel, did the district court judge understand your objection? Because he seemed, I think your objection was on confrontation clause, due process clause grounds, and he seemed to think it was hearsay because he said present sense impression.
Your Honor, I'd be speculating. We made it clear that our objection was hearsay. We filed the memo before the hearing. We objected at the beginning of the hearing. The court itself, before the hearing started, said he had concerns about hearsay being admitted. And then I lodged a standing objection after Officer Payne, the officer who testified to the hearsay. I lodged a standing objection almost immediately after that began to enter the record. What happened, if the court reads ER 84 and 85, which is the court's decision here, is essentially they didn't engage in the Comito balancing. The court found a hearsay exception and jumped right to, because there's a hearsay exception, it's reliable, and therefore came to its conclusion that Mr. Gentry had committed vehicular assault.
I thought the court said that even at page ER 84, even if the hearsay exception didn't apply, it's corroborated and made reliable because of Mr. Gentry's own comments that he was going super fast trying to get to the hospital, and his girlfriend confirmed that he blew through a red light. I mean, when I look at, and I listen to the tape, and you stipulated to the tape coming in, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So I'm listening to the tape. He says, your client says, I tore the F off. He uses the word, I won't. I tore the F off. My girlfriend said I was driving effing fast. She said I blew through a red light. So how, whatever there was about the unknown witnesses, your client hit a cyclist in a marked crosswalk who had the walk sign. That's undisputed, right?
Well, Your Honor, parts of that, he hit a cyclist, whether
marked
there was a walk sign at some point in the crosswalk, yes.
And she said, the police officer reported her testimony, her statement, that it was she had the walk sign.
Her unconfronted statement, yes.
And you never objected to that, right?
Well, we objected to all hearsay, Your Honor.
Well, it's not the way I read your memo or what you said at the hearing. But in any case, why isn't your client saying, I tore the F off, and the unobjected to statement that his girlfriend said, I blew through the red light and he hit a crosswalk, why doesn't that establish recklessness by itself, whatever the standard is, beyond a reasonable doubt?
So a few things in there, Your Honor. He made that statement, just factually, he made that statement, I tore the F off, and that is in the context of him just being stabbed. That area where he was stabbed was nearly half a mile from where the accident happened. So absent the challenged hearsay, what we have is his statements that he tore the F off at some point, and then we have, even though the objection was lodged with respect to hearsay, but even the court disagrees with that, that it wasn't with respect to the girlfriend's statements, that he went through a red light.
And that the debris was scattered anywhere from 100 to 300 feet.
And that the debris was scattered. So what we have is there's
the testimony was 100 to several hundred feet.
Correct. So what we have is there's evidence of an accident. There's evidence that he tore off from where he was stabbed. What we don't have is the key, like Comito, what's an issue here is whether he was operating the vehicle, like Comito, it's the key issue is the central element. So it's not that he was driving. It's not that there was an injury.
I'm sorry. Why isn't the key element that he hit a cyclist in a marked crosswalk when he decided to drive after he had been stabbed? And he said, I tore the F off. And the girlfriend said he blew through a red light. Why, regardless of this hearsay from the witnesses, why doesn't that establish beyond any doubt that he was reckless? He hit a cyclist in a marked crosswalk going, by his own admission, fast to get to the hospital. How could that not be reckless and not in regard for the safety of others? I'm missing this.
Because, Your Honor, the evidence absent the hearsay is that he was driving fast at some point. Fast, the government nor the court submitted anything, is per se reckless. Perhaps that's negligent at some point.
What about blowing a red light and hitting somebody in a crosswalk?
Well, the court's assuming that he blew the relevant red light with respect to where the cyclist was hit. But even if that's the case, that is not per se reckless.
It's not per se reckless to drive through a red light and hit a cyclist in a marked crosswalk, breaking her pelvis and scattering the debris 100 to 300 feet, blowing a red light and hitting a cyclist in a crosswalk is not reckless?
Beyond a reasonable doubt, no, it's not. And so what the evidence shows is that there was serious bodily injury, that Mr. Gentry was operating the vehicle, and that Mr. Gentry at some point was speeding away after being stabbed. But the key element here is whether he was operating the vehicle recklessly at the time of the accident. And the only thing that speaks to that directly are these unknown declarants, which Mr. Gentry could not challenge, which highlights the significant need for him to confront these witnesses.
Well, that again is based on if we would have to accept your position that going through a red light and hitting a cyclist in a marked crosswalk is not by itself overwhelming evidence of recklessness.
To my knowledge, Your Honor, there is no case that says per se going through a red light is per se recklessness. I think the injury to the cyclist establishes the serious bodily injury, which was never contested. This is similar to Comito, where in that case, Comito didn't deny that he used his girlfriend's accounts, her credit cards. He didn't deny that he had access to that. The question was whether he had permission. So yes, there is some cross corroboration here that Mr. Gentry was speeding at some point, that he was operating the vehicle. But the key question here is whether he was driving reckless at the time.
Well, why would the witnesses hearsay estimates, why would that per se establish recklessness, but going through a red light wouldn't?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I see my time's run, but I'd like to answer your question.
Time isn't up. You have 2 minutes left.
Okay. Can you repeat the question? I apologize.
Why don't you just go ahead, counsel? It's all right. You can complete your argument as you see fit.
Yeah, it'd be nice to hear his argument. I'm still trying to figure out. So you had a standing hearsay objection. And what was the government's good cause for not bringing in the witnesses?
Essentially none, Your Honor. They didn't provide any evidence that there was cause not to bring the witnesses. They cited generally that there were COVID concerns. The court itself said that wasn't good cause. And so the argument essentially that the court here first didn't engage in the Comito balancing, which this court said in Comito is not an open question in this circuit. When hearsay is admitted at a supervised release hearing, there must be an engagement with respect to the balancing.
Okay, counsel, I have a couple of questions. One is, am I correct in thinking that if our panel were to determine that there was a confrontation clause violation in the way this was handled, that the government could proceed again and with another hearing and call witnesses by video and let you cross-examine them and try to get the same conviction?
Yes. This court in Martins opined that the government in reversing said that the government could have provided some other alternative, and that was offered by the court here. There could have been a continuance. There could have been video cross-examination. Instead, the government decided to proceed without Mr. Gentry being able to confront these declarants at all. So the remedy would be that it be reversed, remanded to the district court, and then we'd be able, if the government chose to proceed to provide some meaningful way for Mr. Gentry to confront these unknown declarants.
Okay, so I have the second question I had was this. After the police officer testified, is there any way that you could cross-examine the police officer about these declarant witnesses?
No, Your Honor. That would all be speculation. Who saw, and that highlights the issue here and the significance of Mr. Gentry's interest. Who saw the actual accident? How many declarants were there? Was their attention brought to the accident at the point of impact because of the sound? Were they the actual, were they repeating something that they heard? All of this is in question, and we just can't meaningfully discuss it, and we wouldn't be able to confront the officer about each individual declarant, which wasn't even specified. And if the court looks to ER 31 and 32, the officer testified that these declarants essentially were on scene of the accident and started yelling statements at him, but didn't specify who said what or how many there were. And that just highlights the need here against the government's complete lack of good cause, which is essentially nothing. So for those reasons, we believe that this court should reverse and remand back to the district court.
So I assume the government's going to argue this, even if it was error, it was harmless. What's your response to that?
Your Honor, I think there's no fair reading of this that it was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. Perhaps it was probable, maybe even more likely than not. But without the ability to confront these witnesses, we just don't know. And even if this falls within, it has some reliability, as this court's opined before, that may have lessened Mr. Gentry's interest in confronting these witnesses, but it did not defeat his interest. If this court looks at Martin, where in that case, the releasee was challenging your analysis test, and the court said, essentially, your analysis test being wrong is not such a rarity as to defeat his interest in confronting the witnesses who performed the lab test, because in that case they brought a probation officer to testify to the results but not how the tests were confirmed. Certainly Mr. Gentry has more of an interest in confronting these witnesses, eyewitnesses, as compared to Martin with your analysis test, which is also, this court could also look at Walker, where they found that the releasee there essentially had no interest in confronting the witness, because the question there was whether Walker was on supervised release. And the quote from this court was, there was no reason to doubt the evidence because the probation officer was testifying to hearsay that this person was on supervised release, but there was little room to cross-examine, whereas here, all of the questions I've already raised and raised in the briefing are open questions for Mr. Gentry to confront.
All right. Thank you, counsel. You're well over your time.
Thank you.
Ms. Culbertson.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court, Tanya Culbertson for the United States. As to the vehicular assault violation, this was not a close call for the district court. The uncontested evidence at the hearing was more than enough to conclusively prove that violation. I want to clear up quickly a little bit of confusion on the standard of review, because I've heard some talk about harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. It cannot be that an error in introducing evidence at the revocation hearing would elevate the ultimate burden of proof for the government from a preponderance to beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, perhaps we could say that this court must assure itself that the effect of the error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt because the remaining evidence sufficiently proves the violation by a preponderance. Here, as Judge Bennett has detailed, we have a lot of uncontested non-hearsay evidence supporting the vehicular assault. We have the defendant's own statements in his recording, which Judge Bennett referenced. We have Officer Payne's description of what he saw. Again, the debris scattered, the electric bicycle destroyed,
the officer didn't actually see the accident. Do we know how long it was after the accident that the officer arrived at the scene?
We do not know exactly how long it was, but we do know that it was very quickly after the accident. And the reason we know that is in the record at ER 30 and at ER 32, when Officer Payne is testifying, he says he's already on the scene talking to the witnesses, and I think, in fact, talking to Mr. Gentry's girlfriend, who had just run up on the scene, when the second call comes in that there is a potential victim of a stabbing several blocks away. So it had to have been very quickly after the accident because Mr. Gentry did not get very far when he ran.
Could the government have presented the witnesses virtually? Was that a means of proceeding here available to you?
Potentially it could have, Your Honor, but I think the prosecutor, when she talked to the district court about proceeding with hearsay, said that much of what happened here as to the vehicular assault violation certainly was uncontested. She had in her hands essentially this recorded confession from Mr. Gentry about the recklessness of his driving, and she had, you know, all of the physical evidence at the scene. Most of the hearsay that the government intended to rely on went to the second violation, which was not proven, whether Officer Payne could testify to the fact that Mr. Gentry smelled like alcohol because he heard that from another officer on the scene. And that's borne out by the hearing transcript. If you look at the transcript, most of the cross-examination and, you know, a lot of argument is about that hearsay coming in. And, of course, the district court did not allow that hearsay in. It determined that as to that hearsay, Mr. Gentry's right to confront trumped the government's
name. Well, I have a broader concern that this case raises. Like, it seems like there was a shortcut here. And the question for us is, like, how important were those witnesses' live testimony to the outcome of this case? But it seems like there was a shortcut because of the Omicron variant rising. And I'm just wondering, are we going to hear a number of cases like this where the district court judges may have taken shortcuts and not called witnesses because of the 2 years of COVID, that the pressures that have been building to handle these cases?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor.
General concern.
I understand that general concern, and I hope that won't be the case. I will say, though, as to this specific case, I think Mr. Gentry's need to confront was very low. I think he is overstating the importance of the hearsay evidence here.
Counsel, although I agree with you on that point, the problems we are facing at this hearing today are, in my view, entirely of the government's making. Your colleague chose to present this hearsay, even though it was unnecessary, as you've said. The judge tried to dissuade your colleague from doing that in very stark language. So I share Judge Wardlaw's concern. I think the evidence here was very strong, but the reason we're here today with this problem is because I think your colleague made a bad decision to offer this hearsay and not even try to do it by video, and offered no cogent reason for not doing it. So if this comes up again, I think that your office ought to take a different tack.
I will certainly note that, Your Honor, and relay that to the office. And I would simply point out that if this court feels that there was a significant due process violation here, it can just excise the hearsay evidence, and the evidence that remains beyond a reasonable doubt is still sufficient to prove the vehicular assault by a preponderance. But I will certainly pass on the panel's concerns about how the hearing was conducted here. One other point before I sit down, I think the panel is clear on this, but Mr. Gentry did not object to the recording coming in, and that is shown at ER 31 and 53. At 31, that is when the standing objection to any hearsay evidence.
Well, your counsel said that.
Coming in.
I mean, your friend said that at the hearing today.
Okay, very good. I just wanted to clarify that on the record. If the panel has no further questions, then we ask that you affirm the district court.
All right. Thank you, counsel. United States versus Gentry will be submitted.